local anki. Every one of them is longing to be free. Too many prisoners slip to pleasure and go. Don't even know it's prison. I'm bound to the window. Down by the change of ignorance, victimized by circumstances, found guilty. Law and justice blind. The history of magical love.
Listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, streaming online at Kojiko, well, at CFRC.ca, and on cable at Kojiko Cable 282 on Android and iPhone. This is our funding drive edition of CPR, CFRC's prison radio program, which broadcasts to all of the federal institutions in the Kingston area, Joyceville, Collins Bay, Bath, and Millhaven, as well as to the Cape Vincent Correctional Facility, and of course across the area in general. This week, because it's CFRC's 12th annual funding drive, where we solicit the aid of our supporters, our listeners, our lovers, our fans, I guess that there must be some of them out there, we've gone through and picked some of our favorite pieces. We're going to have a special guest phoning in just a little bit, which I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that.
And we'll be just, I think, going through some of the basics of why you should support CFRC, not necessarily, or perhaps even better, why you should support CPR, because this show has been going for quite some time now. It was actually here at the station before I started volunteering and working here in 2010, 2011, and it's been going strong since then with an ever-changing cast of, I would say characters, but that's the wrong thing, of contributors, of hosts, of well-wishers and supporters, and I don't think we've ever tried to vary too much from the basic formats of challenging the prison industrial complex in Kingston, in Canada, and across the world, by and also bringing the voices of those who don't get heard on the air very often, and certainly not very sympathetically, and making them a centerpiece of our show. We have done so many interviews over the years. I brought up a few of the archives, but fundamentally, we're happy with the people who've been supporting us in the past. I know we've actually had donors in past years during funding drives that have donated. If you're out there listening and you still believe in the mission of CPR, and I think, you know, now more than ever, independent radio and a show like this is necessary to challenging an increasingly terrifying world, I guess. I don't have any other positive things to say about that. But the reason we chose all these, I went through kind of our archives, is because rather than telling you all about all the work we've done, I thought I would, you know, play it for you out there listening to CPR. Obviously, there's far more that we've done because this show basically never ends. We've done it continuously now for 7 years, I think. Some of our members have moved away.
Wow. Yeah.
And some of those are just week-to-week live programs. I think a lot of the ones that you and I have done together have just been live with pieces pre-recorded. You've been archiving those, though, separately.
Well, since September, they've been posted online to cfrcprisonradio.wordpress.com. So if you want to see any of the kind of more recent material that we've done, it's all the original stuff is up there.
Excellent, because that's something we should have been doing a long time ago with all of the interviews and pieces. We've had guests that were just live on the air, and we never grabbed an archive of them. So this is a highly selective history of what CPR has done. If you would like to support this show and you see value in the work we do, and I hope you do, please, you can contact the station. Donating online is fairly simple and secure as anything can be online, I suppose. At cfrc.ca, we do have a donation page. If you'd like to talk to a human being, the regular request line that we give out every week, or every month, I should say, for calls from home, 613-533-2372, has been temporarily co-opted into our request, into our pledge line, I suppose, is what it's called. So you can make a pledge or a donation that way. Any amount counts. For those who want tax receipts, we do those. And those who want fancy gifts, there is a whole bunch of them, going up to a $250 donation level, which I don't think I could even afford that. And I work here, ostensibly. Certainly, it's easy to get a hold of us now more than ever. And of course, because there's other people on the line, if you phone and we're on the mic, you'll still get to talk to somebody.
I highly recommend the phone method myself. Mm-hmm. Much more personal way to give money to a show.
Yeah. And there's volunteers standing by right now there who've been with the station for, I think Raphael is a new volunteer, if he's the guy. Yeah. Yeah. But Sheila Rosalie, who's been here for a few years, was in there before. They're happy to talk to you and to do whatever they can. I think we should maybe jump into a radio piece rather than letting
Let's do it.
So one of our longest supporters before he passed away, unfortunately, early last year, was Peter Collins. When I started volunteering for this, he'd already been a contributor to CPR, sending us in audio pieces. His brother Christian also contributed songs, messages of love. It was always an incisive and intelligent and, cutting. I guess incisive and cutting are the same thing. But always, his voice was welcome, and it always made an excellent point, even if he could only get out a three-minute piece to us from Bath Institution, where he was, at least for the time that I was helping with this. And we actually probably have in our archival records as much stuff by Peter Collins as everyone else combined.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, he this was a fight he lived his life for till the very end.
He's an extremely principled and uncompromising individual. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I have a lot of respect for that.
Beautiful artist as well, mm-hmm. And someone deeply committed to fighting the system that he was trapped in. So I'm going to play a piece that he sent us close to, I guess, the end. This was in mid 2015, about radio signals and about the radio signal we were sending out, and his thoughts and thanks as well. And if you don't trust us, why this show is important? This is somebody who. I think this show meant the world to, and it meant a lot to us that we got to broadcast him and to talk to him and his family and supporters across Canada. So this is Peter Collins last year talking about the CFRC radio signal. I can't remember if it's because he couldn't actually get the signal at Bath for a little while, but we appreciate him making the effort, and we'll be right back after that. So please stay tuned for Peter Collins here on CPR, CFRC 101.9 FM.
People who, cameras, actually unplug them from the wall, unplug your TV from the wall, and even sometimes your neighbor, if they would do it for the 1 hour that you might be listening to it, or you know, or depending on what your situation is. So anything electronic or electric that you have that might be running a current, even if it's turned off, if you unplug it from the wall, you'll reduce the interference that compromises the weak signal as it gets out to out by Millhaven and Bath anyway. You know, so that's one way that a message that your DJs can share with their listeners if they're having trouble picking up the signal. You know, another way is with Walkmans. A Walkman might have better luck than a bigger stereo inside a cell. You know, if you put the Walkman up against your window, you can sometimes get a better signal there as well. So there's just a couple of ways that you might be able to continue to listen to CFRC. Even after they switch over to their, the new carrier, and then hopefully, you guys might have luck with getting the carrier to put them on. I wrote a letter to them asking for it to be included, but that's, not up to us. Anyway, I just wanted to thank you guys for all your support and your continued work, and the great programming that you share with the community and us inside. And thanks a lot. Okay, man. Take care.
Hey.
Okay. And you're listening to CPR here on CFRC 101.9 FM. That was Sea Jane Run by Christian Collins that we just played, who is a frequent contributor to the show over the years in support of his brother, Peter Collins, who we played a piece that he sent in a few years ago about not being able to hear our signal due to CSC switching from Kojiko to Bell Media and cutting off the cable signal for a lot of the inmates, and how difficult it often is behind prison bars to even get the radio because they block a lot of things, those walls and bars. Even immaterial radiation and stuff like that. So this is our funding drive show, and as part of the funding drive at CFRC, we always like to get special guests on. Now, we always usually have special content and guests. That's kind of the point of this show week to week. We're really, really pleased to have an extra special guest on with us right now, phoning in, one of our frequent contributors, mostly in writing, who always like to read out his pieces. So if you've probably heard Chester's words before, even if you haven't heard his voice on the air, which is kind of a fun thing about radio. But
yeah.
It's our pleasure to have Chester Abbotsbury on the line with us.
Welcome.
And thank you. Thank you so much for having me and all that prison radio does. It's an important service, I think, for a number of reasons. And I know you guys are doing your funding drive. So before I do my spiel, I just wanted to point out that even when I was in prison earning, it started off $69 every 2 weeks after everything was taken off. And then, of course, the pay cuts came into effect under Harper, and we were down to about $3 a day. And every year, while I was listening to a bunch of shows on CFRC, Cameron, your show, on top of prison radio, and there was another show which is no longer being broadcast that I listened to quite a bit, I donated every year. And it wasn't a whole heck of a lot. It was a $50 donation, but it made me feel as though I were participating and contributing to something important. The other thing is that with the very limited amount of music and kind of your own culture, your own identity that you can bring into a prison cell under your cell effects list, certainly having the really broad spectrum of commentary and analysis and music and culture, the news perspective that came from CFRC was really important. It was something that couldn't be fit into one of the boxes that you get sent to A&D in your 30-day box. So I greatly appreciate this station for sure, as well as prison radio for all that it does. Now, prison radio in particular is important from two different perspectives. So as a prisoner, it's not often that you get news about what's going on in other joints within Kingston or within your region, maybe up at Fenbrook or maybe across the country even. And I know that there are a lot of guys who heard about the deaths of friends from overdoses or fights and unnatural causes through this type of news, or at least heard of things popping off in an institution enough to follow up. Because I don't think names are ever read on this, apart from Prisoner's Justice Day, when they're all put together in a very, very special broadcast I've been exceptionally honored to take part of while I was both in prison and now that that I'm out and on a parole. Getting that news and seeing the different perspectives and maybe hearing about prisoners that don't get talked about a whole heck of a lot, maybe in your joint, because there aren't a lot of immigration detainees, and yet certainly we share a lot in common with them. Among a great many others, there are prisoners in situations that are just not right. You have trans prisoners who are being held in the institution of their birth rather than their actual gender identity, and that's a terrible, uncomfortable thing that our culture hasn't figured out yet, and I think it's a horrible crime that society is committing. And so many of them occur in how prisoners in general are treated. And so that's the other kind of important thing from a prisoner's perspective on why Canadian Prison Radio and CFRC in general, and then all the shows that they rebroadcast as well, are important. And that's because it gives us a perspective on what's going on in the broader world. And in a way, it shows that there are people out there who care about us and are doing things on our behalf. And I always really appreciated that. I didn't feel quite so alone. I know not all the joints in Kingston receive the signal, and I think that's a shame, because there's so much value in these broadcasts, whether it's in the requests and call from home and hearing prisoner writing, poetry, hearing the dedications of loved ones. Even if they're not for you, they certainly warm your heart just hearing them. They tend to give just a little bit of light in that darkness, which is corrections. As a citizen, and this is the second perspective I wanted to talk about quickly, there's a lot that goes on in corrections that they don't want to talk about. They don't want you to know. There's a big veil over the entire institution. And the things that go on, the travesties that happen, the oppression in the system and the way it's built and the way it functions and the way it perpetuates itself are things that every taxpayer should know and be concerned about. The prison system takes the most marginalized in our communities and treats them even more horribly. And I understand that the general perception is that these people committed crimes and belong in a cage. But I ask any of the listeners out there who are regular everyday taxpayers who don't think about prison an awful lot to think about what it's like to put a dog in a cage. And to start poking it with a stick and feeding it terrible food and yelling and screaming at it and just showing it no love. When you let it out a little bit later and 95% of incarcerates are released at some point or another, you're not going to have a nicer dog. And anyone who succeeds when they get out of prison does so in spite of the system. And I give a lot of applause to the people who get through the experience and are able to go on and heal from it and find some wholeness in themselves and reestablishing themselves in the community. And Prison Radio, CPR, CFRC, and its broadcast and its rebroadcast of Stark Raven and all the other good things that it does in getting content from conferences and from academic institutions and papers and in gathering the news to read it to the people who are behind bars because they may not have access to it. It's an important service, and unfortunately, it's not something that we pay for out of our social spending. It's not part of corrections budgets to inform us on what's going on. In fact, they don't really want you to know. So certainly any help that people can give in keeping this going, I think, provides a service to a great number of people. And thanks, guys.
Thank you, Chester. And you were like a frequent contributor to the show, as well as other projects in town while you were inside, right?
Yeah, and participating in something that's going on the outside that's still related to us was a really gratifying experience. I don't know if you guys got to the art show at the Sleepless Goat, but I know Pete Collins' stuff was there, my stuff. There were a number of people who had art that was there, including Tim Filfoldi, with whom I was incarcerated at Frontenac, and seeing the pictures was a wonderful experience. And the activism I got into as well, writing for organizations that are prison abolition oriented, to try and look at this system and say, why does it exist? Because it doesn't actually do what it's supposed to do. In fact, it's doing the opposite. And we should probably think about tearing it down and building something that actually works and addresses the underlying conditions that bring people to prison, rather than doing horrible things to people who usually arrive with a fair amount of trauma and adversity in their lives to begin with.
It was a nice art show.
And that's what we're all about here at CPR. And I don't think we'd be able to find another radio station where we could put, you know, perspectives that run so against sort of the mainstream perspective that exists in society today. So it's another reason why CFRC is so important.
Well, and especially in Kingston, from the perspective of the taxpayer and the citizen, as I was talking about, it's too bad this isn't rebroadcast for everyone to hear here, but it is available through streaming. And that's how I tune in still, is on the CFRC.ca website, and the archives are available too. And of course, that all costs money. I've always appreciated being able to go in and download stuff if I can't actually listen to a show streamed live. Although I do like listening to live stuff, especially calls from home, just in case I have a song that I know Cameron might want to hear. as long as I make sure that it fits into his taste, I know it'll get played. And actually, you guys have always been really, really good at playing just about whatever we've thrown at you. And that's been great.
I mean, we appreciate getting anything, really, and it's you know, we've talked about this doing the show before. Sometimes it can be fairly lonely trying, you know, communicating with other people who probably are feeling the same way in prison here in Kingston is just whenever we get a contact, we're excited and we're really eager to share it. And I mean, that's one of the strengths of this show is that
I also don't
believe in censoring or particularly modifying things. I mean, there's so much of that in the world of people watching themselves and having to, you know, keep their mouth shut when they don't want to be and when they have things to say. I really appreciate just putting it out there, even if sometimes it's been music that I don't like, and I'm not really referring to anything you've asked for, Chester, in specific, but, you know, we used to have a correspondent, Chell, who stopped writing us, which must be a good thing, because I think her brother got out, who would just send us lists of new hip-hop, and I'm not particularly right. A big fan of much of the kind of top 40 hip-hop, but he wanted to hear it, and she made the request, and I didn't think there was any reason not to do that, not to play it on the air.
And I'm involved with the show and pushing that stuff hard now, too.
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, okay, yeah. We'll leave it there. I'm going to blush a little bit on the air. And luckily, no one can see it because we're just in a basement behind some mics here. But
now, Chester, I understand you even had a chance to sort of guest produce a show on CFRC a few months ago. Is that right?
I did. And so the third show that I listened to a lot, I listened to CPR, I listened to The Anatomy Lesson, which is Cameron's show, and there was a third show, which is the one that kind of brought me into CFRC, and it was called Below the Decks. And I ended up writing a letter to the host, who kind of mixed it live on her turntables and that type of thing. And she being a techno DJ, I used to produce psychedelic trance raves in Queen West here in Toronto, and I thought we might have crossed paths here and there. So I dropped a few names, wrote her a letter, and made a few requests. And we began a correspondence, which carried on for a number of years. And when she went away, and so when I got out, I started providing her all the music I could possibly find to help her with the show and to also hear stuff. And I listened diligently. In fact, I have archived going back all the way, I think, to August, a year and a half ago, her shows based on the CFRC archive that people can download from. And when she went out to BC, she took me up on an offer to produce two of the shows. And so I did some kind of remixing. I produced an introduction. I gathered some music from some producers here in Toronto, most of whom were unreleased and friends or friends of friends. And I put together 4 hours of programming for it. It was a lot of fun. It was back in August. And to my great distress, I found out that they were the third and fourth last Below the Decks broadcasts because she decided to call it a night on the whole thing and, I guess, head for harbor. She had a bit of a nautical thing going in terms of her theme. So we often played on that. But, yeah, it was a wonderful experience being involved in the show and getting to know the wonderful people there. And again, I listened to Cameron's show and knew him through the Anatomy Lesson as well as CPR, and we've spoken a number of times now. Eric, you and I have had a couple of conversations as well.
And brunch.
That was great. It was actually brunch on the day that I met Ralph Goodale and Carolyn Bennett, the two cabinet ministers.
Yes, it's like a Twilight Zone day.
For a tour, it absolutely was. It absolutely was. But yeah, I don't know if I would have had the courage and I guess the political knowledge and the political awareness to approach two cabinet ministers and give them a 30-minute speech on prison abolition had I not participated in the community groups in Kingston, as well as CPR and the Prisoners Justice Day broadcast. And a lot of it was just my writing and sending it in, and Cameron and Sealegs would read it online, on the air. And Eric, you've read some as well. You guys actually played a song I really liked and mentioned that I'd like it last time you read one of my pieces, and I appreciate that. It's all of my gratitude to you, of course, as always. But for sure, feeling a part of that was wonderful.
Yeah, and that's one of the greatest things I think about CFRC too, is just that how easy it is to get involved and the ways that there's always a way to kind of plug into what's going on at the station. There's a huge volunteer base and there's always more people coming in. And I went through the training myself in the fall, and I thought it was really good training and gave me some really good skills that I can apply elsewhere in my life, too. So should we let people know what the funding drive number is? Like,
yeah.
We're supposed to do that.
Well, we are, but I think it's been such a good conversation. And I was going to say, I like training people, but also just the social environment here is such a unique place. I think for a lot of students, it's a refuge from the rest of campus, but for the rest of our community, it's just an interesting place. But if you'd like to get a hold of not us specifically, but our pledge line, it's 613-533-CFRC, 613-533-2372. That's the same line that you'd phone calls from home if you had a song request or something else you wanted to carry the word, or if you have access to the internet and you'd rather donate to a computer, cfrc.ca. You can just go there, and there's actually a giant splash page that you click on, and it will take you right to the donate place. If you do have an interest in getting some gifts and items, we do have a bunch of stuff this year. I think for $25, we're giving away these high-quality T-shirts. At $50, there's a live music CD that I made. I didn't make it. The artist made it. I just was the guy who got to curate it and kind of pretend to know how to master and mix things. Think it turned out okay. It's got some great local artists on it, including Screaming Sins and Beta 58s and Krista Muir and Old Man Tofu covering, or Slow Man Tofu covering Tragically Hip and stuff like that. And higher than that, there's Zips and things like that. And if you're in Kingston and you want to go to a great dance party on March 11th, there's a Drake hip-hop dance party that a couple of our Friday and Saturday DJs are working on, Libby Bolt and Laura P. So that's another way to donate. In fact, if you don't have a lot of money, that's probably the best way to do it, is go give $5, have some fun, and you're supporting this community here, which couldn't exist without you listeners. Like, we do it for you, and we hope you enjoy it, and we're so glad that you give back every year. Like, we've already raised $8,000, which is an incredible outpouring of support, and from people I don't know, people I do recognize, which is always a little nice. I really hope some of our regular donors catch in, especially our friends in Atlanta right now who've been donors for the last 4 or 5 years.
Mom, if you're listening right now, call, give money.
Yeah.
Well, and I might add that if you are sitting in your cell and listening on your little under 30-watt radio that doesn't have a USB port, it costs the Correctional Service of Canada something like $28 to write a check. So if you go and do a request to finance and ask to give $10 to CFRC, you're sticking it to the man by $18. By $18. In fact, it's costing them a whole $28 for you to give the $10 out of your canteen or your savings, actually. Because it's a charitable donation, you can send it out of your savings as well. And again, it's just a request to finance, and they come back with a form, and they send it off to Montreal. They write a check, and it comes back. And, there you go. There you
go. I've never ceased to be amazed by the astounding bureaucracy that is the Correctional Service of Canada.
Well, and why not use it to topple the thing?
There you go.
Please.
As a prison abolitionist, let's make incarceration so absurdly expensive that we go and look for things that actually work. And it's pretty much gotten to that point in terms of the amount of money, the $100,000 it takes to put a male, and I think it's about double that for a female, just due to scales of economy, into the federal prison system. And that's pretty ridiculous. Pretty ridiculous. Anyway, sticks to the man. Give your money to CFRC.
That's the best way to do it. Please, everyone. All right. Do we want to wrap up the interview here?
Sure. I just want to thank you so much for coming on, Chester. It's been a pleasure. It's always been a pleasure being in touch with you, working on projects together, and staying in touch after you've been released. I'm so happy that we're able to do this.
Thank you, host number one and host number two. It's been a pleasure. I will talk to you guys later.
Thanks so much.
Solidarity. Thanks. Bye-bye.
You too. All right. Well, that was Chester Abbotsbury on our mics. That was a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Always. So we're going to play. We should have asked him if he wanted us to play a song. So maybe we'll get to that later. But I have a track here by Hits Golden Messenger called No Lord Is Free. I think after that, maybe we should play one of our interviews from our archives that Sealegs, who's also a member of the CPR Collective, did a few years ago with Sabine Heine. I'm just going through our records. So let's go to that. Here's some music and hear an interview as well from 2013 on CPR, CFRC's prison radio program. Thank you.
I hated myself, and I hope that I would die. Oh, I hated myself till somebody caught my eye. 'Twas a pretty child singing in the trees. Eyes like flame, he called my name. But no fool such as thee. Something broke my mind, my mind. Something broke my mind. What was it broke my mind, my mind? What was it broke my mind? It was a Sabbath day, and I was picking many stones. It was a Sabbath day. Oh yeah, I felt like going home. Oh, go easy, what the child said to me. Oh, go easy, for no lord shall be free. Bombed out witches in a river house, sing your song. I took my money and laid it down. The money's gone. All colors set against the moon, against the moon. Babylon gone, it'll be real soon, it'll be real soon.
My name is Sabine Heinlein, and I'm the author of Among Murderers, Life After Prison.
So you recently published this book just this spring, and it explores the challenges faced by released prisoners who are re-entering the community. I'm wondering how you came to be interested in the subject of life after imprisonment.
I started out initially looking at people in New York who don't work, because as you might know, New York is a very competitive city, and all people ever talk about is their struggles related to work. And when I first came to this country, I didn't have work, and I was wondering, you know, what do people do who don't work? And, you know, I looked at various types of people, at trust fund babies and at slackers and at mentally ill people and at homeless people. And eventually I came across this thing called job readiness classes, and I was wondering what that is. And I quickly learned that these classes are run by reentry organizations, and that they primarily offer services to people with long criminal records. So I you know, visited like I think three or four of these agencies, and, you know, observe their classes. And so I you know, realized that a lot of the things ex-prisoners struggle with are actually not addressed in these classes, and that these classes take a fairly superficial approach. And I started talking to the clients, the students of those classes in their lunch breaks, and they were more than willing to be interviewed and to share their struggles with me. And so I thought that it would be interesting to follow someone for a longer period of time, someone who had just been released from prison, and to sort of chronicle the obstacles he or she encounters on their first 1 or 2 years out.
And so how did you meet and connect with the residents of the halfway house who you chose to write about in the book?
Well, I had heard about this halfway house and about the agency called the Fortune Society a long time before that. I had, I think, already done like a year of research. But I went to something called the Albany Advocacy Day, and it's organized by another reentry organization. And it's basically two busloads full of people who are somehow engaged in one way or another, engaged in the cause. And so I went up there in order to report for an article on the advocacy group. So they went up there to achieve legislative changes, to talk to legislators. And on my bus ride back, I sat down next to a man who had a big backpack with him, and he was wearing a suit, and he was sort of hesitant to remove his backpack at first, and he was sort of looking at me oddly, you know, which later turned out, I think he just didn't know how to deal with the situation because he had, and how to deal with women maybe also, because he had just been released after serving 29 years in prison. And his name was Angel, and Angel and I talked for, you know, 3 hours or however long it took from Albany to back to New York City. And Angel told me about his struggles. And, I had interviewed maybe 50 to 100 people. And it quickly became apparent to me that Angel is the person I was looking for, you know, someone who's willing to share his story, who likes to talk about himself, someone who sort of had an edge to him. You know, he was very charming and he was very funny and he was a very interesting character. But there was also something about him at that point I couldn't quite say what it was, but there was something else about him. And so I was interested to find out what this was. One thing I noticed that unless you face what you have done, there will always be a point missing in your story. And this point was missing in Angel's story at first. And so, you know, there was always like a part of the story I felt that hadn't been addressed. And I was wondering why it wasn't addressed, because my belief is that in order to rehabilitate someone or to rehabilitate yourself, often rehabilitation is really up to the individual who committed the crime because there's so few help available in prison. But in order to rehabilitate yourself, you have to admit to what you did and deal with what you did, really. So I noticed there were very big differences in how Bruce and Adam, the other two main characters in my book, dealt with their crimes as opposed to how Angel dealt with his crime. So Adam was really haunted by guilt, and he had organized the robbery, and in the course of that robbery, his accomplice shot two security guards, and so he was charged and sentenced for murder. So he went to prison for 31 years, basically for the fact that his accomplice had shot and killed those two guards. And yet he was the one who was the most haunted by his crimes. He had hallucinations. The man appeared in his prison cell later on for many years. At first they were, they appeared in the state they were in after they were shot, like all bloody and screaming for help. You know, I mean, I think that's a sign of post-traumatic stress disorder, by the way, which is fairly common among people who have killed. So it's not only common, you know, I'm not trying to protect these people, but it's not something that's only common among victims. It's also something that's common among murderers. So these people appeared to him, and they eventually started to coach him and tell him what he needs to do in order to redeem himself, and that he needs to do acts of contrition. And Adam then, you know, over the next 10 or 20 years, started to help other prisoners who were sentenced for life, help them cope with the fact that they would possibly spend the rest of their lives in prison. Bruce, who was like much more reserved than Adam and Angel, those three men had become friends at the halfway house. So that's how I met them. I met them through Angel. He introduced me to them. So Bruce was, he had a surprising balance, which always, you know, he didn't really know how to talk about his crimes at the beginning, and he often complained that there was no one really out there who wanted to talk to him about his crimes, and that most people are horrified and they turn away, and, you know, there's very little help available and very few people who are willing to go over these things with him. But so Bruce had this balance about him, and he always said, you have to learn how to carry it, and that it was very important for him to name his victim, a stranger he had shot over an argument in a liquor store in the Bronx in the early 80s. You know, he always addressed the victim by his name, which I found very interesting. Angel didn't do that until I asked him what the name of his victim was.
And that was a section or a segment from an interview that Sealegs, who isn't here tonight, but would love to be, I'm sure, recorded a few years ago with Sabina Hine about a book she wrote about prisoners serving life sentences in the United States for violent crimes and offenses. Part of our vast archive. We can't even get to most of it tonight because there's just so much of it. We just want to repeat a few things. So one, we didn't do this while Chester was on the air, but Chester does have an online repository of his writings if you'd like to go check it out. What's the email address for
it
that?
It is chesterabbotsbury.wordpress.com, and that's spelled chesterabbotsbury.wordpress.com. And there's some really good stuff. It's actually pretty frequently updated, and I'd highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, always really good writing, always thought-provoking. Even our conversation with Chester was thought-provoking. So, also, we just got an update that we're actually at $8,500 right now, slightly above that. And we did get a few pledges to this show, both during the show and before it. And I know, just from speaking to some people, there's pledges to come. So thank you, everyone who has supported CPR and CFRC during this funding drive. Again, if you want to get a hold of us, because we're going to be back next week. We have Calls from Home coming up in a couple of weeks. What are our best ways to get a hold of us?
So you can give us a call. We have a phone number with a voicemail that can be used to leave messages for our Calls from Home show. So that could be song requests, it could be shout outs, it could be poetry, you know, for people who are inside and can hear it in the Kingston area. So that number is 613-329-2693. If you are listening from prison and you would like to add this to your pin list, the name, the person with that phone is Alex Jackson, and the address is 52 Fifth Field Company Lane, Kingston, Ontario, Kilo 7 Lima 3, November 6. And you can also write us a letter. We love getting mail, and we do correspond quite a bit. You can get in touch with us at CPR, care of CFRC, Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, and the postal code is Kilo 7 Lima 3, November 6.
And write us an email to cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net. That's cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net. And you can also, if you have access to Facebook, there's a Calls from Home Facebook group where you can leave requests, thoughts. I do call outs periodically on there as well. So that's another way to get a hold of us. Contact the station directly, 533-2121, if you have a hard time getting a hold of the pin but are in the Kingston area and can phone us. All right. We're at the end already, and we've got Live from Lazy coming up. We're going to start with a piece we aired, and we're going to end with a piece, I should say, a few years ago about the experience of Indigenous women at the Prison for Women, as it is International Women's Day. That seems like a very apropos way to end tonight's broadcast. Thank you for everyone who supported us. Thank you for everyone who's ever helped us over the years. We're going to keep going with this because the struggle never ends, but I hope it does someday in victory. That would be nice. All right. Thanks so much. This has been CPR on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Sego, my name is Vanessa McCourt, and you just heard the Strong Woman song. I sat down with Elder Wanda Whitebird to talk about her experience working with Indigenous women sentenced to the Federal Prison for Women in Kingston, Ontario.
My name is Dancing Star. I come from the Bear Clan. I'm a member of the Mi'kmaq First Nation, and the territory I come from is Buttondick, which is about 19 miles outside of Antigonish.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain the significance of the drum song Strong Woman to the Native Sisterhood at Prison for Women?
Yes. I mean, for me, it's one of the songs that I hold dearly in my heart. So in connecting with the women, the Aboriginal women from across Canada who were housed at the place called Prison for Women here in Kingston, Ontario, many years ago, the song originally, my understanding, came from them, for them. It was put together by a woman by the name of Francisca, who was a PhD student in the discipline of music here at Queen's University. Young Woman's Song was one that they enjoyed to sing, and it brought them an energy of just being able to be who they are. And in my years of working there, I went to work there in 1990, coming up from Nova Scotia prior to that in 86. I went to work at Prison for Women from 1990 to 1993. And during that time, and it's very sad, stressful, we had 6 suicides inside of the prison. And in singing that song, I can remember singing it through the night after someone had committed suicide. And for days after that there were other women who were also triggered into that frame of mind that life wasn't worth living, you know. And so we would sing that song all night until the sun came up, and we would know that the woman would be okay for another day. And so that song represented life to us, you know, and it helped get through some really difficult times for them. And so the women who would come to prison would learn that song, you know, and they would learn the history, and so they owned it. Things went moving on into 1993, or, you know, my husband and I brought that song out of Prison for Women for the community. For me, whenever I hear it, I always stop to make sure that we think of our women in prison. It's a very powerful song. Mm-hmm.
What was your role at the Prison for Women? What did you do there?
I was the first Aboriginal counselor hired at Prison for Women in 1990, and that came out of a task force around, I think, the first suicide that they needed. So they did have a spiritual person, an elder, and so they decided they needed a counselor that was specific Aboriginal person to work with the women, and so that's what I was.
And what from your role there and what you saw, what would you say the experiences were of the Aboriginal women prison population?
I mean, it was horrid. I mean, if everyone could see what I had seen, I think they'd think of the world in a different space. Mm-hmm. You know, people who are isolated from our communities, they're locked up. I mean, you know, the prison was a dark and dingy place with, you know, bars but the self-injurious behavior, the mental health issues. Women who were there were women who were, you know, living from sexual abuse and domestic abuse and being away from their families, not having families. I mean, the issues were rampant, mm-hmm. you know, but it was a horrible place. I mean, and still is. I mean, prison still is a horrible place. Mm-hmm. And one weekend at Prison for Women, it was a long weekend in August, and it was the longest weekend I can remember. There were like 972 stitches stitched up within that weekend, wow. of women who had self-injured. And of those women, I think they were all Native women. So it was horrid.
You spoke a little bit to like mental health issues and self-injurious behaviors. Were those fairly rampant with the Aboriginal inmates? Like what kinds of issues did they bring in with them to prison?
A lot. Self-injurious behavior was... No, I don't think there was a woman I met that didn't have it. You'll see women in prison with scars from their wrists all the way up to their... way past their elbows, mm-hmm. you know, and it was about trying to get them to understand what that was about and how to release that pain. And, you know, I used to say it was like a balloon that would fill up with air to the point where it would hurt, and that was your emotional feelings. And so that you'd had to burst that balloon to be able to for it to dissipate. And so that was like bursting the balloon. Mm-hmm. Self-injurious behavior is something that individuals did when they got to, didn't know what else to do with the pain that they carried from being away from their families, from being sexually abused, from being part of the 60 scoop, from being in foster care. You know, and we're led to believe that being born Native was enough to want to commit suicide. You have to be depressed and sad and sorry because, you know, the rest of society thinks that we're useless. So when you get that from a whole bunch of people, then you begin to believe that.
You alluded to it earlier, and 20 years ago, and again, the incident that happened at Grand Valley 5 years ago. Obviously, the prison system is not adequate for Aboriginal women. Would you say that's
absolutely
true?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that there are people who need to be in prison. Mm-hmm. There are people who need to be isolated from society because they commit crimes and they hurt people. There are definitely people in the world who do that. Mm-hmm. Paul Bernardo needs to be in jail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but are we putting people in jail who don't need to be in jail, you know, or reaching out? It's not helping anybody. I mean, you know, in reality is one time there was a conversation about whether women should have vibrators in prison. Mm-hmm. Well, what's it to you? Whether that's a private thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are you even considering that they shouldn't have sexual release in prison or mm-hmm. masturbate in prison? What is it of you're controlling nature to say people can't do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know, I'm very thankful because they teach me about how lucky I am to have freedom.
I read about the Native Sisterhood in the prison for women. Can you talk a little bit about what that was and the importance of cultural ceremonies to the Aboriginal women? What role that played in their time in prison?
It was very important for them to have the Native Sisterhood. I mean, we would go in and, you know, do ceremonies, or we would go in and sing. But in reality, when they were locked up there without any of us from the outside, they had each other, knowing that they were Native Sisters. No matter where we come from. And so they had an opportunity to share that with each other and be understood that the same time that they shared that history, how to be proud of that history, how it makes them different, unique, beautiful, and a part of who we are. So if one forgot that, the other one could remind them. Like, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. We got to pray, and we got to pray together.
Well, Nyamgoa, thank you for agreeing to talk to me about the experiences of Aboriginal women.
I always say that I can share from my experience, but I have never been locked up in prison. I've never been a prisoner.